All right, y'all. Welcome back. It is Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest is Arash Norouzi. And I'm sorry for saying your name wrong. I'm sure I did. He's an artist and co-founder of the Mosaddegh Project. Welcome to the show. How's it going?
Very good, Scott. Thanks.
I'm happy to have you here. I'm sorry. I'm sure I did say your name wrong, right?
It's actually Arash. Here's a little hint. Car crash without the seat.
Ah, there you go. Arash Norouzi. But Norouzi, yeah. I got right?
Perfect. Excellent.
Poor guy. You got to tell everybody the car crash thing, huh?
Yes.
What a pain. All right. All right. So this morning, the Washington Post called. They wanted a comment from antiwar.com about this subject that we've covered often over the years, and no matter how much we cover, it never seems to really go away. And I referred him to your article at our website, Wiped Off the Map, The Rumor of the Century. I hope that he'll go and read it and understand the full context. The article's from May 26, 2007. The way I remember, I think the original quote came from 2005, right? 7 years ago.
Yeah, we're at least about 6.5 years ago. That was late 2005. It was right after Ahmadinejad had been elected.
Right. And now, you know, I don't know if any of the quotes that I gave the Washington Post were worthwhile. It was early before my coffee. I hope I don't come out looking too silly. I hope at least he got my quote right, even if I didn't give a very good one. But my point was basically how sad it is, what an unfortunate thing it is that the mistranslation of the president of Iran's speech back from the fall of 2005 has served as a talking point for so many warmongers so many times in a row, you couldn't even count it, really. This has just become a standard truth under the big lie theory that if you just say it over and over and over again, people conclude that it must be true, or else because it just couldn't be true that people are lying that much, basically, when in fact, no, they're lying, or at least they don't want to be corrected on something that they could have been corrected a very long time ago. So anyway, that's my little introduction to this thing. Wiped off the map, the accusation from every anti-Iran warmonger. It comes from a speech in October 2005 by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Why don't you tell us about the speech? First of all, give us a little bit of the context of the speech, then give us the real translation of the segment in question, and maybe we can get a little bit further into the context after that. How's that?
Sure. Basically, the context is actually more crucial than the translation of the quote in question, because The speech was, you know, the World Without Zionism was about, obviously, the end of Israel, and the context was that he was referring to, of course, he's quoting Khomeini, the founder of Islamic Republic, that the Soviet Union had disappeared, and, you know, Saddam Hussein must go, and so forth. And in this context, he was also referring to Israel as, the regime that occupied Jerusalem. The Imam said that this regime occupying Jerusalem must vanish from the page of time. Basically referring to not a declaration of war, but more of a kind of a dissolution of the state as a Jewish state or as a occupied territory.
Right. So now this is a part that I emphasized to the guy from the Post this morning, too. My understanding at the time, I don't think I ever interviewed you back in 07, but I did interview Juan Cole, I think, back in 2005 about this. And probably after that again as well. And he talked about how the context really was the president is not just saying this. He's actually paraphrasing the old dead Ayatollah Khomeini, as you just said, who was referring to Saddam as well. But he was also talking about the Soviet Union. Now, they were at war with Saddam Hussein at the time. America was backing both sides, Iraq more, I guess. But if you look at the context of the USSR, there's no way anyone thought, or I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but did anyone in the 1980s think that the Ayatollah Khomeini was threatening Moscow with a first strike?
Absolutely not, yeah. The other fascinating thing that never comes up is the idea that although they were basically ideologically enemies and stated enemies, that is Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran and Israel, everyone remembers the Iran-Contra scandal in which Israel actually sold arms to Iran, the same state that apparently was threatening to destroy it, according to, you know, the media, because again, this is a quote from Khomeini. So there are many lapses in logic in this whole narrative about, you know, the suicidal nature of Iran and the idea that Iran would be intent on destroying the state of Israel physically. And then there's also the question of really how serious they are and how I believe that this is more of a political stance. It's really, you know, kind of like a distraction from their own human rights abuses and their own the contentious nuclear program. I think all states are doing this. Israel is using Iran as a kind of a distraction from its, the question of Palestine. And, you know, it's just kind of a tit for tat. It's circular. It goes around and it's really more of a politically motivated than necessarily something that is their determined agenda.
Right. Well, and now here is an important piece of context, too, and that is that Ahmadinejad, as jerky as he is, and he says a lot of very provocative things and, you know, likes to make his adversaries red in the face or whatever, he's not the commander-in-chief of the Iranian military. Might that matter a little bit?
Yeah, that's also rather significant. Of course, the so-called supreme leader, Khamenei, is in control of the military and the nuclear program, and far higher than the office of the president. Because the office of the president is most visible, and he comes to the UN and does interviews, we obsess on him and fixate on him. But, you know, that's the other thing, is that this is pretty much a universal policy, foreign policy of Iran towards Israel. This is not something that is dependent on Ahmadinejad, you know, whether he had stayed in the election in 2009, that fraudulent election, or not, this would have carried on. So, actually, I'm surprised that Israel relies so much on Ahmadinejad, because, in fact, this is the position of Iran, regardless of that figurehead.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I noticed, and I was less familiar with Iranian politics and all this in the 1990s, but, you know, I was kind of sort of paying attention. And back then you had Rafsanjani and Khatami. And now I don't have any idea whether there's any actual reason to consider those two men moderates. But at least they were perceived in Western media as friendlier and more approachable type characters. And so back then, all the anti-Iran propaganda focused on Khamenei, the Ayatollah, who after all is still very scary looking and has a funny hat and a big beard and looks a lot like, he's not quite so wild-eyed as the previous Ayatollah, but he's still a very scary looking Ayatollah theocrat figure, and they would always focus on him. But then when Ahmadinejad came into power and replaced Khatami, and he's a little bit more of a, you know, dangerous villain character for their media narrative, all of a sudden they forgot about Khamenei, who's actually a pretty reasonable, politician when it comes to international relations. He doesn't really tend to do anything very provocative. And they just decide they'll focus on the loudmouth because he's better for the narrative, even though he's not the one with the power.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an amazing thing. All right, now, we actually have very little time. When we get back from the break, I will ask you to actually go through and just sort of kind of once and for all, we'll do this again and give us a word for word and translate this thing and prove to us what it was that the president of Iran never said. Not that it really should matter anyway, but it does. I just kind of want to get this, as long as we have the opportunity. Oh, and I didn't mention, I'm sorry, this should have been in my gigantic, long-winded, half-nonsensical introduction, that the reason this is in the press again is because the Deputy Prime Minister of Israel, the Minister of Intelligence and Atomic Energy, has admitted to Al Jazeera that, yeah, they never really said that. They didn't say we'll wipe it out, but just it will not survive in a more general context. Anyway, we'll be right back with Arash Nowruzi. He wrote this article back in 2007 for Antiwar.com, wiped off the map the rumor of the century. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. Our guest is Arash Nowruzi. He runs a thing called the Mossadegh Project. And he wrote this article. He wrote four articles for us at Antiwar.com. Antiwar.com/orig/Nowruzi.php, you'll find it. Or just Google the rumor of the century. and you'll find this article come right up on your favorite search engine. It got reprinted a lot of places and linked to a lot of places because it's a definitive debunking of the accusation that the president of Iran, who has no capability to do so anyway, wishes to wipe Israel off the map with an offensive military attack of a nuclear nature or another kind. And now, Rash, could you please take us through this, translate from the Farsi, what exactly did this guy say? And we'll just, again, dispense with this accusation once and for all.
Would you like the Farsi or just the English?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, go through in Farsi first, and then, I don't know, break it down word by word or term by term if you can.
You know,
as you will.
Imam, the Farsi is Imam Guft and Regime Ishkelgar Igud Bayad As Safiar Yeruzgar Mav Shavad. It's basically, again, he's quoting Khomeini, and the entire sort of, you know, trajectory of what he was saying was sort of building up to, hey, the Shah fell. That was the whole point of the revolution. Nobody ever thought it was possible. It was unthinkable, and it happened. And, of course, it was violent, but it wasn't through war. It wasn't through wiping out their own country. The Soviet Union, you know, the Cold War was enormous. You know, it seemed like it was never going to end. It fell on its own without war. And then you have Israel, and he said, the Imam said that this regime occupying Jerusalem, referring to Israel, must vanish from the page of time, and that this statement is very wise.
So now, it sounds like what you're saying is not only is he not threatening a first strike, in context, he's explicitly referring to the non-violent kind of Velvet Revolution style end of regimes, right? Or no, I guess you say he refers to the overthrow of Saddam Hussein as well, or no?
Well, one of the things he had said, he had mentioned actually three. The first was the Shah of Iran, which was the U.S. installed monarch that had, you know, the previous regime that they overthrew, Russia, and of course Saddam Hussein was their arch enemy. Saddam was an enemy of Iran even under the Shah, but it was part of, it was like a basic tenet that, that Khomeini had, was basically outlining that Saddam must go. So that was actually something at that time had been unfulfilled. That actually happened through war eventually, but not on the hands of at the hands of Iran, although they fought an 8-year-long war. So it's really just the context is absolutely crucial to this.
Well, so I don't know. I guess back to the context, not of the speech, but of why we're talking about it. It's the biggest deal in the world that here an Israeli official has admitted as much and said, oh yeah, they never really did threaten any sort of first strike or say we'll wipe it out. We just said it ought to go away someday. And so, you know, that's a pretty good rough paraphrase from an Israeli official on this. Does that mean that from now on you and I can say, look, even the Israeli government admits that they never really did say that, and maybe then this will stop being an effective talking point of the war party here and in Israel?
Yeah, you know, one wonders what effect this kind of thing will have on the media, because Dan Meridor is the deputy prime minister, and he's the minister of intelligence and atomic energy, apparently, so he's kind of high up in the Israeli government. And the fact that he is clarifying, and he was actually very fair in his description, he said that they didn't say we'll wipe it out, but it won't survive. It's a cancerous tumor. It should be removed, et cetera. He's saying, admitting that Iran is questioning the legitimacy of the state and not threatening to actually wipe it out, which, of course, is still a very major and inflammatory thing. But the idea is that U.S. and Israel have, I think it's fair to say, have for a number of years now, had a policy towards Iran based on this rumor, based on the idea that Iran's nuclear program is military and that it is intended to be used against another country. And that is, you know, obviously, you know, one of the, if that's the case, that's going to be one of the most significant events of our lifetimes. And I think it's kind of it's significant to make that distinction. In this case, Dan Meridor has done that. And in addition, you know, there are other officials that are coming out that are saying this. Ron Paul, in the past few weeks, he was on Hannity, and he said this, and he refuted this misquote. He also was on Piers Morgan and CNN, and that was, you know, it's a major primetime show. He said that this is a misquote and that's not what they said. What's interesting, what's curious is that after all these years, and even though we have people like Ron Paul and people like Nobel Prize winner Mohammed El-Baradei from the IAEA and other figures who have made reference to the fact that this is not what was said, that none of the major media have seemed to picked up on even just the mere idea that some people are questioning it. Some, you know, that in alone would be, you know, interesting. So it seems to be that the media is kind of set in their ways, and it decided that, look, we can't turn back now. We've been telling the world
right.
the sky is falling, you know, for the past 6-7 years. How can we suddenly, you know, damage our credibility by saying this huge thing that we've been telling you is actually way off?
Right. Well, you know, this is something that, you know, the more I replay it in my head, the more I think I probably failed this morning at getting my points across very well to the guy from the Washington Post. But that was, you know, part of my complaint was that the media majors have never really corrected this. Maybe, and I'm not sure, but maybe the Post and the Times have run things on their blogs, on their websites. But never in the paper, and they certainly never did a whole story about how, oops, we were the ones who were wrong and told you wrong, and certainly on TV, if a pundit says, look, everybody knows that they threatened to wipe Israel off the map, blah, 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 they just build that in as the premise to their argument. No one ever stops and corrects them. You know, Ron Paul would be the only one when they build it into the premise for their question to him. He has to stop and refute, you know, the structure of their question before he answers it. But other than that, yeah, you're right. I mean, the narrative just completely carries on anyway. And you said a lot better than I did. I should have just had him call you, but I didn't know your phone number yet. Next time, I'll just give him your number.
You know,
I certainly recommended him your article.
Well, I want to mention that the Washington Post itself, the fact checker, Glenn Tesler, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. He has just a couple of months ago, October 2011, did Ahmadinejad really say Israel should be wiped off the map?
Oh, really?
And he concludes, no.
And now this was on the blog, or this was the actual story in the Post?
Well, it's probably internet only. It's on the blog, yeah.
Yeah. But still, that's pretty good, though, if Glenn Kessler has, in fact, attempted to clear that up. But, yeah. It does go on, though, as the false premise and very rarely challenged. Now, one thing here, I want to see if I can challenge you a little bit better than I have so far. Somebody posted on my Facebook page this reality check by Ben Swan, who he's a local news anchor, I forget where, and he does some really good reality checks about a lot of things. And he says, well, a lot of people contact me saying I was wrong, quoting Juan Cole, who paraphrases it, you know, the exact same way you do, I believe. But then he found some others who said, no, let me see if I can quote this part right. Sohrab Madavi, one of Iran's most prominent translators, and Saimak Namazi, managing director of a Tehran consulting firm who's bilingual, both say wipe off or wipe away is a more accurate translation than vanish, because the Persian verb is active and transitive. Which, now we're really quibbling because it's still clear that he was not talking about, I am threatening a military action here. But still, on the quote, vanish or wipe away, argue about it with these guys.
Well, again, I would go back to the fact that, you know, there's way more than just that little moment there. In fact, it's weird that after all the scrutiny, the speech itself has not been examined. It's kind of an interesting speech. It's an interesting, you know, read. To see what the hell they're talking about Israel, world without Zionism. He's basically trying to push this this idea that forward, you know, in the Muslim world, presumably, and around the world, that Israel is illegitimate and that, you know, he's a leader of a state. So that's pretty significant whenever he's holding a conference all about it. Anyway, the context is very clear. Regardless of whether one wants to quibble over all translations can be interpreted slightly differently, and that's dangerous. And you remember that everyone has probably heard about the Khrushchev, we will bury you in the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
And that was another misunderstanding.
Right.
So,
all he was saying was we'll outlast you, we'll be there at your funeral, basically, because we'll survive and you won't, which was, of course, was wrong, because he was an idiot and their entire system was based on a horrible economic policy that couldn't possibly survive. But anyway, not too much unlike our own, I guess.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, one needs to really go back. I would encourage people, if they're curious, go and look it up. I mean, the New York Times, I think that was one of the translators that I mean, they did incorrectly put wipe off the map, but if you actually read the article, you'll come away with a different impression about what he's saying. If you read the speech, and you can also go to Memory, which is a pro-Israel, you know, translating service that, you know, they have a very different translation. It was a Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, I believe, a while ago, tried to actually debunk the people who, like me, who were saying that it's the rumor.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing so, they actually had a translation that got, which was far different and didn't have wiped off the map in it, but they argued that, well, that's what he meant. But even the fact that they're admitting that those words were completely wrong is fascinating. You know, Ahmadinejad has come here many times. He's always asked about this. And it's curious that he never says something violent, you know, that which is what we're expecting. Larry King had interviewed him, you know, a while back, a year or two ago, and he was even basically feeding him the line, like, you're not talking about destroying Israel, right? You're talking about the regime change. So he was actually already with that understanding, and then Iran state media then took that and put it on their articles and as a headline that, you know,
well, Iran
is not going to wipe Israel.
The Iranian government does have an official policy on this, do they not? Which is just, we want an election held that includes all of Israel and West Bank and Gaza too.
Whenever they're asked what their solution is, they always say a referendum, and that would be essentially the way that Israel would be, you know, would vanish, essentially. But they're really talking, you know, my interpretation of this is, and especially if you look at everything, they don't appear to be abusing the Jewish population in Iran. So I don't think that this is about the question of Jews. They also have, Ahmadinejad stated he's not against Zionism as a principle, but just not there, not on Palestinian land.
Maybe this is overstating it a little bit, but pretty much, I'm under the impression anyway, how about I'll say it that way, I'm under the impression that if Israel would withdraw out back to the 67 borders, not the 48 borders, but the 67 borders, and, you know, keep just West Jerusalem, that more or less the rest of the Muslim world would go along with that. I think that's actually the official position of most, quote-unquote, Muslim countries already anyway, is just end the occupations of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. So, you know, the Iranians might say, you know, go have Zionism in Madagascar or Outer Mongolia or something like that. But ultimately, if the Israelis had a reasonable position on the situation, I think it's pretty likely the Iranians would too. Although, and in fact, we have the evidence of the great peace offer of 2003 where they said, we're willing to talk about all of these things. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to be too rosy and optimistic about that, but it's just pretty obvious who's picking the fight here. It's the United States and Israel.
Yeah, and when I try to deconstruct these sort of things and figure them out, I just use a basic kind of algebraic sort of perspective, which is, Iran is defending the plight of the Palestinians, and they're standing up for the Palestinian cause. So what are we to make of that? They are great, you know, icons of human rights and justice. Well, if that were the case, they wouldn't be murdering and torturing and, you know, jailing people and journalists and so forth. So you can then deduct that this is not about human rights. This is about politics. Now, if they were, you know, pure democracy and free and you know, like Candyland over there, then maybe we would say maybe they're sincere. So when you look at the whole picture, this is power politics. This is, what do you call it? A jockeying for position in the region. Iran is a hegemon. Israel is also a hegemon in a way, in the military sense. Israel is, obviously, there's already a pre-existing, you know, notion that the Arabs want to push them into the sea. And this already exists in the Jewish psyche, obviously for good reason. And so this already kind of concept was there before Iran said anything about Israel.
All right, now, real quick, can you please tell us about the Mossadegh Project?
The Mossadegh Project was really something that, I guess I would describe it as an academic and educational, it's a nonprofit. Our purpose is basically to explore this period of time in the 50s whenever Iran was democratic and was moving into a direction which was had a lot of hope because they were nationalizing their oil. They were trying to resist this historical trend of being dominated by the other powers, by Britain and Russia. And Mossad is kind of like a Gandhi-type figure for us. He's a very, very principled person, almost freakish, almost in a way kind of like freakishly democratic. And he's, in many, many ways, he kind of had a very strong belief in that. And so it's a very ironic and tragic story. So we're basically, I mean, obviously this was something the CIA was involved with. It was covert. There's a lot of secrecy. There's a lot of misinformation. And our intent is to try to sort of gradually research it. And as we learn about it and try to fill in a little bit more, we are then sharing that with people. We have a long-term goal, which should be happening soon, which is the Mossadegh exhibit, which will be touring, five-city tour, hopefully opening in Los Angeles. And that would be all about Mossadegh's life and times, all about this period. Whenever there was the nationalization of oil, this, you know, this is a long time ago, but this at the time was the equivalent of the nuclear issue today. It was everywhere in the news. It was like the fate of the world rested on, you know, what happened with this dispute between Iran and Britain, and they had nationalized Anglo-Iranian oil company, which later changed its name to British Petroleum, or BP. And so there's a lot of connective tissue, really, when you look back in history, because time is just a continuum. And when we're looking at Iran now and the whole interplay between the nation, a lot of this doesn't totally make sense unless you understand the historical context for Iran, not as a, you know, dictatorship the way it is now, but just as a state and how it was viewed on the map and how it was treated as a kind of a chess piece. And the importance of oil. So there's the CIA, there's oil, there's, you know, cloak and dagger, and all kind of archetypal issues that are timeless and still have a very resonant, you know, part in our present life and current events.
And that's at MohammedMossadegh.com. D-E-G-H is how that ends. MohammedMossadegh.com. And I really like the quote. That's ancient history. That's Jimmy Carter talking about the coup of 53, which was only 26 years before the revolution of 79. Somebody asked him, well, hey, in the context of this revolution, the fact that this guy, the Shah, was our installed puppet dictator this whole time. And he says, that's ancient history. You know, that has nothing to do with this, basically. And yet, just think about it. If Ronald Reagan had been overthrown and replaced with a royal backed by a foreign power, Ron or anybody else, whether we'd be over that by now, that like, well, you know, we're used to just being living in a state run by a sock puppet of a foreign empire. 26 years, that's not ancient anything, you know?
Yeah, they're still talking about hostage crisis, and it's been more than that, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly, great point. Yeah. Great point, yep. All right, well, now, we got to go. I mean, we're over time. I thank you very much for your time. I want to recommend to everybody the website, MohammedMossadegh.com. And also, you can go there and find out about this touring exhibit. Tell us a little bit more about where you're going and when.
Well, we're just developing it right now, but it will be opening in L.A. So we haven't scheduled anything yet, but that'll be – look for that, you know, probably this year.
Okay, great. And that's
and we have a Facebook page as well.
Arash Norouzi, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Scott.